Hello and welcome to Talking Therapies, a podcast made together with Psychologies Magazine and the UK Council for Psychotherapy, or UKCP for short. I'm Susie Walker and I'm the Editor-in-Chief at Psychologies. Each month on Talking Therapies, we will be talking to a UKCP therapist about a range of topics. And in this episode, we will be exploring what an underlying phone obsession can really mean in your relationship.
It's sorting ourselves out and being honest about, you know, why I need to be on my phone. It's not about work, usually. It really isn't. It's about me feeling needed.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Hilda Burke. Hilda frequently features in the media, contributing and writing articles about relationships, anxiety and therapy for magazines like The Financial Times, The Guardian and The New Psychotherapist, to name a few. As well as her private practice work, Hilda is a volunteer counsellor at the HM Prison, Wormwood Scrubs, a men's prison in London, and a guest lecturer at the London College of Fashion. Hilda is also the author of The Phone Addiction Workbook, a book that aims to help people build a healthier relationship with their devices. Shortly, Hilda will be talking to Sarah Niblock, the CEO of the UKCP, to find out why phones have become so intertwined in our lives and our relationships. But first, here are some comments about relationships and phone dependency from people we spoke to on the street.
People using their phones more and more will become a problem in relationships, mainly because the people in the relationship will stop talking to each other. They will do everything via their phone, and any little issues that could have been solved quite quickly will potentially become a large issue and potentially end the relationship.
I definitely think people are more reliant on their phones because now that, you know, technology is where it is, you have your emails on your phone, you can watch TV on your phone. Everything that you need to do to get by, you can pretty much do on your phone, as well as apps. You have apps for everything.
I think people are absolutely obsessed with their phones.
If they are constantly on their phone, that is the biggest sign of disrespect, and it's as if you're not being listened to.
Because if your partner sits there and ignores you for the whole evening, what's about having your partner? You might as well sit on your own.
My wife is thankfully awful when it comes to a mobile phone. She never answers it or anything else, so we talk to each other. That seems to work for us.
Just do simple things like leave your phone in your bag and only check it once every hour, or let people know that you're going to be busy at a certain time, or even nowadays there's apps where you can track how much use you're using on your phone, and I think you can block yourself from using certain apps.
Learn to turn it off. Don't take it to bed with you. Leave it in the kitchen would be the first thing. For parents, try and have some sort of control over the interaction your kids have on their phones.
So the advice I'd give to someone who's looking to better balance the time on their phone and time with their partner is, I guess, to learn what makes you look at your phone. So, for example, for myself, it's notifications. I get a notification that someone's done something on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and so the first thing I want to do is look at it. And then because I've done that, I want to scroll through it. So turn off your notifications. If you turn off your notifications, you're less likely to look at something. I mean, if it's work emails, if you know that your working hours are, say, 9 to 5, then outside of them, don't look at your emails. Know that that is your time off, that's your personal time, so that's the time you should spend with your partner. And you could even make kind of games out of it. You know, if you're out for dinner, the first person to touch their phone has to pay, or something like that. And just creating kind of an understanding, rules about phone usage, and make sure that you both stick to them so that you're spending enough time with each other rather than times on your mobiles.
According to research by Ofcom in 2018, 78% of the population now use smartphones, compared to 17% in 2008. With people in Britain now checking their phone every 12 minutes, what effect is this having on relationships?
So tell me about your experience then. Are more and more people coming to you because of excessive phone use in relationships?
I think it's never a presenting issue, but it can be sort of part of a problem. So if, you know, it's used as evidence sometimes, like a partner is too distracted, spends all their time working, can't switch off, can't wind down, can't relax. So it's kind of evidence of an issue or a complaint against the other partner.
Does this come up a lot more in conversations? Yeah, presumably
absolutely.
Because of technology now. So
absolutely. It's a lot more pervasive, and people, of course, have multiple devices. So personal phone and a work phone and then maybe a work tablet. So it's really hard to kind of get a hold of these devices and their sort of role, how they encroach on a relationship, how they draw focus away from the person you're with. And obviously in a relationship, usually, you know, in their personal lives, that's the person who is most affected by it. So it comes up in couple therapy, but it also comes up in individual work. Yeah. So a person might be complaining about their partner's use and they're not there, and sort of, how do I cope with this? How do I communicate with them? Because, you know, every time I mention it, they get very defensive and I need to be on my phone. And so it's easier to work with a couple together in the room, and you can sort of like look at, you know, what the phone means to them, you know, a fear of maybe being disconnected, or the risk, the fear of what might happen if they're not always available to their boss. So their partner can kind of witness what's beneath it. What's the vulnerability? What's the insecurity? So it's obviously, it can be a lot more effective to work if you've got both in the room. But, you know, having said that, like with any issue, it's also looking at, well, okay, even if they're complaining about their partner, looking at what is their own relationship. You know, maybe they also use it more than they'd like to. So
well,
often,
this is it. You know, there's this thing about how the phone can impact the partner emotionally. You know, I say to my husband, "Oh, we're not having phones at the dinner table," and it's a practical disruption. But obviously, if a partner is on their phone a lot, what impact does it have on the other person?
Well, I think it can lead them feeling neglected, or that they're not getting enough attention. And, you know, it can bring out that kind of child part, you know, and it can again bring up older issues. Parent who was always busy, never had time for them, was always working, or there were eight other kids. So it can kind of evoke all those old kind of childhood wounds. So again, it's not so much the phone, it's what it's enabling and how it's making that person feel, what it's bringing up.
I mean, is there ever any justification for checking your partner's phone just to put your mind at rest and find out what's going on there?
I think it can really erode trust. You know, I think some partners, some people I work with, if there's been an infidelity, there will be an agreement about for a certain period. You know, it's spoken about. And I think if it's negotiated, it's okay. You know, can I? If the partner is empathetic towards why the suspicious partner is feeling that way and it's discussed, then that's one thing. But I think sneaking on someone's phone, and I think it's kind of a lose-lose, because if you find nothing suspicious and they find you looking at their phone, then it's really can be very disruptive in a relationship. And if you do find something, that person is already like, well, you were snooping on my phone. So they may not be fully sort of apologetic or taking responsibility for whatever it was. I don't know whether they're having an affair or gambling or, you know, whatever that their partner doesn't like that they found. So it's kind of like a lose-lose, really.
What is excessive phone use in your experience? I mean, there is quite a lot of pressure on us to be attentive to work communications, but what could be considered excessive, and what that might that be telling us about ourselves or our partners if we are on it too much?
Well, I think it's like, when does any behavior become excessive? When does, you know, gambling, drinking, shopping? So it's like, what is it taking you away from? Is it impacting on, I don't know, your fitness, your wellness, your exercise goals, your friendship goals? Is it sort of cannibalizing some of those interests and some of those goals you have? And if it is, then I think it's problematic. You know, if it's kind of like, oh, if only I had time to exercise, if only I had time to have some more quality time with my partner. But then if you look at your phone and see that you've spent 3 or 4 hours per day on it, then that's probably an issue, you know, because you're putting aside other things that are important to kind of serve this kind of obsessive need you have to be on your phone.
Possibly because you're hypervigilant, you know, so that you're thinking what might happen or fearing what might happen by constantly checking your phone, and you're losing track of what is right now.
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a good point about kind of that FOMO and pulling you out of the present. And like you say, what is going on? You know, I'm here with my partner having a nice time, or I'm having a chat with my friend. Can I just experience that fully? or do I need to be just keeping an eye on, you know, what's going on Twitter or Facebook as well? So I think it definitely can pull us away from being fully present. I mean, I feel that as well. It's not like I think I'm completely clean of it. I'm not. But what I've learned in writing this book is, you know, how do I manage that? So one thing I do when if I'm out for a drink or a coffee with a friend, rather than what I did before, which is put my phone on silent, and then if they go to the loo or go out or something, then I'll have a quick look.
Yeah.
I'll never check it when a person is there, unless it's I'm meeting someone else or keeping, you know, really a valid reason. But what was happening was my friend would go away and then I might get involved in another conversation on WhatsApp. And then when they'd come back, I'd have lost our stream of conversation. So I'd have been, you know, kind of multitasking these different streams of conversation. So now what I do is I switch my phone off and put it in my bag. So it takes longer. It's just not worth it, you know, by the time I put my password in. And so it just adds an extra layer, you know, to kind of make it less accessible.
So you make an almost like make a conscious appointment with your phone rather than having it interrupt you in that way.
Yeah.
I'm interested though, as a psychotherapist, can psychotherapy help us to understand presumably what it is that compels us to look at our phones in the first place?
Absolutely. So it's kind of like reflecting on it as a symptom rather than, oh, the problem is phone use. And if I can just manage that, then it'll be fine. You know, then I'll have no issues. And it's like taking a step back from the phone use and like, okay, what's it covering up? What are the times when I'm doing that obsessively and I find I've just gone on to look at something and then 4 hours later I'm still on Instagram down a kind of rabbit hole. And I find clients are very aware of this, actually. They will sometimes come and say, yeah, no, I know. I was feeling really down that day. And so the kind of self-destructive behavior, self-sabotage that can go on. So I think it's looking at it as a symptom of trying to sort of distract oneself from difficult emotions or difficult situation, trying to numb out. A lot of clients will readily admit, I just want to distract myself. Yeah. I just want to think of nothing. In the couple sphere, I think it can be absolutely a sort of avoidance of the issue. It's a kind of distraction. It's a kind of digital soother. You know, if we're on our phones, it's kind of like, well, we're not fighting. Maybe flirting with other people, whatever could be going on. You know, before it used to be TV. And some of my clients, they would talk about parents who always watch TV in different rooms, stuff. But now people can be in the same room, but be looking at different things, be consuming different movies, talking to different people. So it's kind of alone together. It sort of, it doesn't feel as isolated, but it is.
But it is.
It is.
Couples or people are listening to this and thinking, I'm recognising a bit of myself or my relationship here. Is there anything that we can do before it hits crisis point to be able to keep the intimacy and stop going down that rabbit hole that may potentially separate you?
Well, I think it's like you said, Sarah, at the start, you know, about creating times, you know, and making it very specific, making it like meal times. Can we please not look at our phones? And maybe then it's like, okay, maybe both parties notice they're having better conversations. They enjoy being together more. Maybe it's like, okay, when we're watching a movie, can we just watch it rather than checking our phones and kind of being distracted? You know, starting small with portions of the day when you can just switch your phone off. Like for me, it was walking my dog. That's where I started. So that was like 50 minutes, not a long time. You know, if you start going cold turkey and doing these digital detoxes in the whole weekend, people are setting themselves up for failure and then they don't try again. It's even double that with a couple. The chances of two people falling off the wagon quite early, you know, and if one falls off, well, and the other's like, well, why bother? You know, it can become self-fulfilling because, you know, once you get a taste of what it's like without your phone, rather than it becoming deprivatory, you think, you know, actually, this is quite relaxing. I'm enjoying this dinner more. For me, it was, I'm enjoying this time without my phone, so I'm going to do more of it. I wanted to do more of it. It wasn't like, oh, it'd be good for me to do more or I should do more. It was like, it's like I'm noticing the benefits.
Tell me the ways in which psychotherapy can help people resolve some of these issues with their intimacy. I mean, I'm interested in how we can start to see psychotherapy as not the thing you do when things have got bad. And there's this myth around psychotherapy that, well, you must be in a really bad way to need a psychotherapist, when in fact, psychotherapy is brilliant at just really future-proofing your relationships and making sure they're in the healthiest possible place so that you can recognise and deal with things. I mean, tell me a little bit about that and the kind of work that you do with couples to put them in a stronger position to avoid conflicts and these breakdowns.
I think there is the tightest turning on that. You know, I do work with some couples who seem to have a pretty good relationship, I think, by anyone's standards, but they want to stay together. They don't want to get divorced like their parents did, and they want to stay together as a family unit, and they're putting their, you know, their time and their money where their mouth is on that. You know, when I think about the couples I work with, I would say, you know, only about half are at a kind of critical point. The other half are functioning quite okay. Certain sticking points, but overall, I would say they're in pretty good shape. But going back to your question, how can psychotherapy help? Couples that are getting on quite well, sometimes there is that attachment to, we are a healthy couple. You know, people look at us and think we're, you know, have a desirable relationship. But sometimes, to keep that sort of almost ego state of the relationship, certain things have to, I'll just let that go because we don't really fight or it's not that big a deal. But what regular therapy can do, every 2 or 3 weeks can kind of go, you know what, that's kind of niggling me a little. I didn't think it was that. So kind of relationship hygiene.
Yeah,
so kind of rather
10 years
than,
and
that's it.
That'll be really
That's it, exactly. So sort of identifying things early, looking at why there's a niggle there rather than I'll just let it go. You know, but a lot of people's idea of letting it go is like not speaking about it, but it's in the memory bank. It's stored. It's like in transactional analysis, it's like green shield stamps. It's, you know, I'm saving them up.
Yes.
And I might cash them in one day. Because if you have a go at me about something, if you don't, I'll let them go. But if I've got them in the bank, if you pull me up about the state of my side of the room or, you know, how I don't know, whatever, my phone use, then I'm like, well, there's that thing you did 3 months ago. I didn't say anything about it at the time. You know, that bothers me. Keeping an eye on that's airing those things so that they're dealt with, they're put away and really put away rather than kind of held in the bank
It's just so interesting because, you know, as a couple in a relationship, there is so much encouragement to think about your home and making that beautiful and obviously keeping ourselves dressed or physically fit for a relationship. But there seems to be nothing really within popular culture that refers to the essential emotional maintenance of a relationship in the way that you describe. And it's so heartening to hear that more and more people are investing in that way.
In
their future.
And they speak about it too. Future. I think that's the really heartening thing about it. People will say, oh, I'm meeting a friend and I don't know, I spoke to them about what happened between, you know, so it's like normalising.
Yeah.
It's not like, ooh, better not say because people will think, oh, we're about to get divorced or, you know, it's a bit shameful. The more people talk about it, the way they do now about their therapist, that's not a taboo anymore. No. You know, that's normalised and even expected. So it, particularly in, you know, in London, it is a bit of a bubble, of course. But I think that is starting to happen slower. It's definitely a few steps behind, but it's becoming
Definitely going that way. We're not just talking about mental health now as being when something's wrong. We're talking about mental health and emotional health, I think, much more now in society, particularly because you hear so many people in public positions talking about that, and maybe that will help to inform
And Michelle Obama, she spoke about going for couple therapy, and I think that was really powerful.
True. It was.
You know, because people hold them up as some sort of, you know, relationship idols, which of course, you know, they probably have their ups and downs like anyone else. So I think that, again, that was a real destigmatizing. Of course we do, you know, that's how that keeps
Barack
us healthy.
Was on his phone all the time.
I bet
he doesn't just have one phone. He's probably got a whole bank of them.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I wonder how then. I mean, obviously, whether you're the President of the United States or whether you are just, you know, making a living doing an everyday job like so many of us, you're going to have to use a phone. It's kind of ubiquitous now. So what advice would you have for partners or couples to ensure that, you know, they can use their phones but can do so in an appropriate relationship friendly way?
So it's kind of boundaries with oneself, then, you know, that discussion with one's boss, maybe if you feel like it's getting out of hand, to kind of go, okay, this is not, I'm serving me, it's probably not serving my work. There's a lot of interesting research done on, you know, what contributes to productivity. And I think it's Luxembourg is the most productive country in the world. They work the least hours. They don't have a culture of mobile working. So there's something about, you know, switching off is really important for productivity. Mm. So, you know, having that discussion with your boss, having your own boundaries and sharing those with your partner. But the hardest part is with yourself. Mm. It's a huge thing for one's ego to go, you know what, I can take a 2-week break, even if I'm in a senior position, and, you know, it goes on without me. Mm. So that's quite threatening for a lot of us. But of course, it affects the relationship. Mm. You know, if that's our relationship with work, that's going to sort of intrude. It's sorting ourselves out and being honest about, you know, why I need to be on my phone. It's not about work, usually. It really isn't. It's about me feeling needed and having that sort of codependency and sorting that one out with yourself and then, you know, laying down the boundaries.
Absolutely. We live in uncertain times now. People are probably more worried about their employability than they may have been at one time. I mean, really, just to recap on this conversation, I think what you've outlined so helpfully is that a phone, it's a thing, but it's a symptom of something. And what psychotherapy can do is to help us look to the reasons as to why we feel we need to have this thing attached to our eyes or ears 24/7, 365. It's not essential. The world will keep on turning. So what is it that compels us to do that? Mm. And particularly, as you said, because it can be very damaging to our relationships. Mm. We can be there and not be there. So I think it's been very illuminating what you said and how psychotherapy really does get to the very core of the issue.
Yeah.
Which may come out in lots of different types of dependencies or activities, but there's usually something quite specific underlying it, isn't there?
Absolutely.
That's so useful. Thank you very much indeed for that.
That was UKCP psychotherapist Hilda Burke speaking to Sarah Niblock, the CEO of the UK Council for Psychotherapy. If, after listening to that, you feel you could benefit from some talking time with a psychotherapist, then go to the Find a Therapist section of the UKCP website and have a look through. The website address is psychotherapy.org.uk and look for the Find a Therapist tab. We'll also be discussing phone dependency in relationships in Psychology's magazine this month. Or you can find us online, psychologies.co.uk. We'll be recording a podcast every month for the next year with some of the UKCP psychotherapists. So to remember, like and subscribe to our channel to hear it first, and it helps others to find us too. So join us again next month. Till then, thank you so much for listening and take good care of yourselves.